Hey listeners, this episode of the Dual Screens podcast contains a whole lot of very, well, sexually explicit content. It's a podcast about hentai video games, so you are warned. Thanks for listening, and be excellent to each other. Welcome back to the Dual Screens podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, he's in that other box across from me. He's Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
I have a feeling
this is going to be
one of our most memorable episodes.
This is a something. This is just getting to the hitting the record button was quite the adventure.
Right. It was.
Ladies and gentlemen, with us this week is Ryan Caldwell, the owner of Critical Bliss and creator of Midnight Castle Succubus DX. Because
publisher.
Because why not? Ryan, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm fine. I'm just sitting here waiting for my Thai food to be ordered.
I heard. Yeah, no, I get it. I had soup tonight, and I feel like always the problem with soup is that you're just always hungry after. Like, it's not a... Soup is not the meal, as we learned from Seinfeld. But Critical Bliss is a rapidly growing developer/publisher that focuses on releasing raunchy, fun, and unique hentai games internationally, globally, around the world. Just make sure to keep your keyboards clean, folks. So this is going to be an interesting one, because this is a first for us. We have not had any developer of any hentai games, or publisher, for that matter. Andy fell in love with this game. And instantly sought you out to get you on the show. But Ryan, who is new to the show, and for our listeners who might be new to the show, this is the Dual Screens podcast. This is the world's number one indie developer interview podcast, probably. Everyone in the gaming industry, be it a programmer, an artist, a voice actor, it doesn't matter, publisher, everybody has a story to tell, and we want to be their platform to do so. The show posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home, podbean.com, and a video version goes up on youtube.com/dualscreenstv. Now, Andy, I'm going to kick it over to you. You start us off here, handsome.
You know, it's interesting, Stephen. We talk about who our heroes are, who we idolize in the world.
Yes,
I think
we do.
Ryan here might be my hero.
Oh, okay.
That is the most sappiest shit I ever heard.
Now, I've read your backstory, your origin story, extensively. And I think it rivals the greatest of comic book legend.
Rivals.
Oh, and I want you to go into what brought you to where you are today, Ryan.
That is a long ass fucking story.
It's a lot. As long as you want it to be, dude. Let's go.
Okay. All right. Hello. my name is Ryan. Everybody calls me Logic. And I publish, make, as well as like market, like all kinds of lewd shit and everything else like that. I started off making a site called LG, called Lewd Gamer, and things of that nature. It was around 2015. And essentially what ended up happening was that there was it was around the time when the industry started really first booming and things of that nature, due to the fact that there was there's so much involved. There's credit card processors, just how Western culture perceives adult content and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. The scene really didn't have a proper platform whatsoever in any way to thrive, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until Patreon came around that gave creators the ability to make adult material and things of that nature and monetize. So there were creators back in the day that were doing things like adult stuff, like Phinoxo. Phinoxo is well known for a title by the name of Corruption of Champions, and he's one of the first people to really like have like some sort of like financial incentive while he was making his text-based games, a text-based title. But it wasn't really until Patreon where a lot of projects started hitting the fan, stuff like Summertime Saga, stuff like Future Fragments, a lot of adult games started being becoming like a thing there, right? So so just quick recap on the industry, then I'll get into myself. So that's how it basically started. So after a while, over time, Steam around that time started allowing visual novels onto the platform, right? You know, so we got stuff like the Sakura series. Nekopara is one of the bigger ones that was like a really important one that came out during the time. And but you know, a lot of these games, and then Honey Pop, of course. So there's Honey Pop.
Oh, yes.
So, like that one. So a lot of those games had patches. They had patches that you can get off-site that could essentially adultify the games, despite the fact that they were on Steam, right? So that became it was known as the off-site patch, and you know, it was always, you know, a bit more of a hush-hush thing and everything else like that. Over time, that was when I started noticing. I started paying attention to Steam really, really closely. I did before because I'm a marketer man, right? But I didn't pay attention as closely as I did now, and I spent a lot of time studying the platform. Understanding how the algorithm works and everything else like that, and talking to my colleagues during the time to talk to Steam and have more conversation, because clearly if there was allowing to do this patch stuff was going to be allowed, then over time, right, I feel like after, you know, proof that we're an industry worth investing in, we could convince Steam to go adult. And then Steam went adult, right? So then, you know, a lot of people are confused why it happened and everything else like that. Because they're like, why? What the hell? Why would they do this all of a sudden and everything else like that? But I think a big part about it is that Gabe privately owns the company, because if he had investors, I think they would have a problem, right? So I think because he privately owns the company, he can technically do what he wants. He see, you know, there was a unfulfilled market, and I think and then after. Other people, including my including myself, were able to convince Gabe and Steam itself to just go to this lewd direction. The industry has now had a platform, and now we're starting to thrive more as a proper indie industry instead of basically banking on just crowdfunding and all kinds of stuff. So what you're seeing now is essentially what indie gaming was when it first started. Which is really weird.
That's an interesting take. Yeah. You're comparing the hentai world to what indie games were back in the day.
We have to catch up to the
indie you do
really quickly though, right? So things like there's a lot of trash on Steam. I mean, when it comes to H stuff, and every now and then, but as I said to others, the Steam's user base is very very vicious, and they want to play games that are good. And despite the fact that adult games are adult games, the novelty of, oh man, there's porn on Steam has essentially worn off after the past like 2.5 years, right? So now, instead of it just being, oh, I see titties on screen, now people are looking for things like Midnight Castle. I want to have titties on screen, but I still want to play an actual compelling and engaging experience, right? And that's how the scene has evolved. So now we're basically in a crossroads of the scene has to play catch up really quickly to the indie market. There's a lot of people who are paying attention. There's a game called Wildlife that's on Patreon right now that has like over almost 100, making almost, I think, 100,000. And a lot of the people who are there are ex-Ubisoft people. I know there's folks from Riot that are ex-people from Riot. the people working on a game called Aurelia. It's right now in my catalog. It's a whole pixel art title. Some of those people are from EA, XEA. There's another title by the name of Bad Night that's made by my business partner, and he and Bad Night is ex Blizzard, so they're coming. and they're coming really fast.
I'm sure they are.
Wait, Andy, before you get into like the genre in like sure. in more detail, there's something I wanted to ask because
go right ahead.
I feel like there's statistical information out there that you and I, Andy, just wouldn't know about. Like when you're going into researching this genre in general, are those numbers out there? Like, are you able to find who, like what kind of numbers we're looking at as far as people who are looking for this type of game? Or is it a game by game? You kind of just see, okay, you know, this game has this kind of following, whether it's on Patreon or Reddit and like you kind of gauge it that way.
Well, the big thing about how the industry functions at the moment is that because it's still the West, right? Mm-hmm. It still has it's not as underground as it used to be, but it's definitely more like, you know, it's not like a good example. For example, like let's say you guys know what Subverse is.
Subverse.
Yeah, no, go Google real quick and you'll type in Subverse, you'll see a Kickstarter that made $2 million made by Studio Foe.
Oh,
right?
My. Okay.
That's the problem. The problem is that I had to tell you what that is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That Kickstarter is one of the most
successful. That made that much money. Yeah.
Yes, right? That Kickstarter is one of the most successful Kickstarters that we've ever, not only just in the indie industry in general, but in the adult sector. Studio Foe is, some colleagues of mine as well, and they are making this a pretty large porn H project. It's on Steam. It has like 112,000 followers on the community group.
Wow,
it's pretty meaty, right?
That's awesome.
But that's the thing. But the thing about it is that nobody knows about it, right? Like at least from the greater. I mean, a lot of people know about it, but a lot of the indie industry doesn't know about it.
Right,
but Subverse shows that you know even on the community group on Steam and everything else like that that you can still that even though all this is kind of like undercover and everything else like that that you know their industry can still thrive in a much more like you know on the dark side of the indie scene right? But the problem is that because we don't get any support whatsoever from the mainstream
industry, right.
Yeah. You guys, like I said, you guys don't know, right? But this should have been big fucking news compared to anything else that's been that.
I think it's sad that I know what a Ouya is, but I don't know what this game is.
It's almost like you have to be looking for it to find it. But yes. If you are looking for it, you will find
right,
it.
Right, but when you raise this much money, it should be on some list on some site somewhere, like the top grossing Kickstarter projects.
Right.
Check but it's like it's,
you have no coverage.
They think it's like a huge taboo because
it's faux pas.
It.
Yeah, and that's a very unique
but
Western
the game looks
thing.
Fun. Looking
like,
at it,
are you getting? Up. Are these games getting like international? Recognition for the accomplishments because like we everybody here knows like the West is just prude. That's just like we'll show you sawing a person's head clear off their shoulders, but we will not show boobies. Like boobies mm-hmm. is like, oh my God, no boobies. So yeah, you internationally it's much more wide known.
That's the thing too about some more interesting knowledge. So there's a game that I have by name of or that I'm publishing. And doing some financial support. It's called Orc Massage. It's as just as funny as you think it is, right? You're an orc that massages monsters. It's hilarious, right? But the gameplay functions are like it's puzzle based. It's pretty cool. So the scene, of course, is still very strong in Japan, right? There, it's a lot where that's based on, but there's also a scene in Taiwan. And there's a very, very strong scene in Taiwan and other Asia in Korea, surprisingly, despite the fact that Korea in that porn is illegal there, which is funny, right?
Well, that's why it's popular.
So you still have these international environments that still essentially celebrate adult content regardless. You know, like UG4 is one of the biggest Taiwanese websites there, like massive. It's really big. And it's like the IGN of their environment, right? Mm. And they cover adult stuff all the time, right? So and because of Steam and things of that nature, Steam has also assisted in expanding the environment. You know, there's a lot of people on Steam, they're like, I can't believe this, you know, like, I didn't know porn games were a thing, yada, yada, yada. So Steam, because of Steam's, like, you know, helping out and things of that nature with giving us a platform finally, now we're starting to reach out to a wider demographic slowly over time. And that bottleneck becomes, you know, less tighter as things go on. Like, especially after stuff like Subverse does come out. Mm-hmm. And we have just bigger titles that I know that are being made by Riot and things of that nature. I think we'll have a very, 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 like, plentiful industry. Yeah, another thing too that's really interesting about our environment is that, yeah, Steam is very competitive and very algorithmic based. I've figured it out, so I'm fine. You know, for a lot of indie people, maybe like this won't be impressive, but for like, because Midnight Castle sold 16,000 copies in its first week.
Wow.
But for what the devs are, and what they've had before, it's like amazing to them, right?
Sure.
The competition. So, but there, I would say that the H environment has a much higher support group. And in fact, I think that's also the reason as to why Steve was like, okay, let's just give them the AO tag. Because previously, because of how strong our support group was, right, back when you know, Steam was still dabbling with, okay, you can release the game on Steam, but it has to be completely censored, but you can have a censorship patch, we were just dominating the algorithm, right? And everybody was just getting, yeah. So I think part of the reason why they even went the adult route was just to say, okay, well, if people want to see the adult stuff, they can opt in, because you have to opt in regardless,
right?
And then we won't have to worry about it mixing too much with with people's regular experience. So
yeah,
I can't imagine playing Midnight Castle censored in any way. That game, the reactions I got while playing that game through the first time are sort of unreal.
Imagine Simon's Quest, but better, right?
Right.
Isn't that crazy? Right.
See, you know why I love it so much is because it's actually a pretty competent Castlevania game too. Like, it functions, the gameplay, the weapon selection, the boss fights, the platforming, the engine. It's like a Castlevania game, but there's titties in it and demon fucking, and it's the best thing ever.
And like I said, Castle in the Clouds is even better. I haven't released that one. So Castle in the Clouds is like where I would say Midnight stays really close to the roots of what Ness is. Castle in the Clouds tries to defy those things while still feeling Ness-like. You'll see.
Mm.
And especially since, thanks to helping out the Japanese people and everything else like that, they have the most budget they've ever had in their lives in the past 6 years. So they're gonna be like, so now they're like, oh man, you know, let's make Castle in the Clouds like phenomenal. So they're gonna add more content and clean up the level design and make it prettier. So,
I'm gonna do a quick search on.
When this is like just a you know, I'm gonna ask very rudimentary, fundamental questions this kind of thing. Why is the whole H thing so important? Why is the adult content thing so important when these are clearly competent devs that could make, you know, in some cases probably exponentially more money making a good, competent Castlevania game, which we've now know is not very easy because so many fucking companies and developers screw it up astronomically. What is it that makes them kind of go in that direction? Is it just a love for the craft and it's just like, you know what, make the thing we love and that's it? And it's like, You know, I'm trying to wrap my head around the mindset.
The interesting thing is that like it is partly a love to the craft, but I mean, I'm gonna be like, to be honest, man, like I sit down and I stare at Steam all the time because mm-hmm. that's my job, right? Mm-hmm. You know how many fucking games that look good and incompetent just fucking don't work,
yeah.
right? Like,
yeah.
check out, like, if you're on Steam now, check out this game on Steam called Dawn Thorn, right? So there's it's a top down, it's a Zelda clone. It looks really, really good though. Dawn, let's go together, right? Dawn Thorn. I bet the chat's like looking it up too, right? So there's this, you know, it has I think it had a Kickstarter, whatever. So there's Dawn Thorn, right? TBA, it's been cooking for a while, meaning that it's been on the Steam platform for a bit, collecting stuff. That's what we call cooking. And it has, and you take the community group, right? It has 292 people on it, right? So, yes, it looks pretty, it looks competent, but this thing releases and it's not going to get any traction. This will be a failure on release. The only way it will be not a failure on release, at least in my eyes, right, is that if it gets enough journalistic coverage. But there's a lot of titles like this or that are just on Steam that look competent. They, you know, take strong inspiration, but even improve on a lot of the mechanics of traditional Zelda top-down Zelda, right? And mm-hmm. it's just nothing. However, if Dawn Thorn was an H game and it had adult stuff in it, yeah, sure, you probably won't get a coverage on Polygon. But it would sell a lot more underneath my brand. It would sell vastly more, and that's what's the interesting thing when it comes to selling. Now, don't get me wrong; a lot of indie, like H indie devs, are not really even aware of this or aware of that in the first place. A lot of them do it for the love of the craft. They're just do it for the interest, right? Some do it because they're like, they want to achieve or pursue the fact that H games can be just as good as regular games.
Right.
A lot of this mentality of like, let's just make something that's like, you know, subpar or whatever. And then, you know, we'll depend on the, people's lizard brains, right?
Or the nostalgia factor, essentially.
Yeah.
It looks like a Zelda game.
The quote unquote love letter, the love letter syndrome. Right? Yeah.
But generally speaking, on Patreon, like a lot of people will make like just subpar content because they know people are going to come in and support it and things of that nature, because some games are more fetishistic than others, right? Mm-hmm. Some games focus more on incest and things of that nature, and people love that shit. Whatever,
it's
right?
The strangest
and
it's, thing it is, to me, that whole fad going on.
I think you found the quote for the show, by the way.
It is a man. Let me tell you, man. Like, you have no idea. It's a lot worse than you think. So, and it is, so we have all that type of shit that's going on and everything else like that. But, there are just a lot of people that just like, I want to make an H title. They're not really, you know, I think a lot of it also has to do with the feeling that the indie market is set in stone. You know, some people don't like the shit that's going on with AAA and things of that nature. A lot of them are artsy, right, and everything else like that. There's a lot of reasons. You know, it's the same. I would say that a question that you asked me is the same question I'll ask any developer. Why the hell are you working on a Castlevania clone where you can work on a FPS clone that would probably have more reach, you know?
Right, right.
So that's what I'm saying. So everybody has their reasons. Everybody has their motivations. Sex does sell, and it is easy to grab people's attention. But what I want to ask, though, right, mm-hmm. is an important question. Mm-hmm. Would you have given Midnight Castle Succubus any kind of attention if it didn't have tits in it?
Well, here's the thing, Ryan. As a gay man, it still had my attention all the way through. I think even more so with the boobies, because they're kind of hard to not look at.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not saying like keeping you entertained when you actually played the title. What I'm saying is that what
drove you to click the buy now?
Yes. What drove you to actually click the button, right?
Well, what for me, it was a recommendation. It was a friend saying, "There's this game that's Castlevania Hentai." He gave me a few screen caps, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm sold."
So it was the whole hentai thing that sold you on the game, like. And this is the reason why I asked the question, is because we've had, even on this podcast, probably developers, probably a dozen or so that made Castlevania or Metroidvania games, right? And they are at this point just being pumped out like nothing, like Mega Man clones being pumped out now like nothing, Zelda likes being pumped out like nothing, and pretty soon the battle royales started getting pumped out like nothing. So the reason why I asked the question is because it feels like you're kind of removing yourself from the pack and creating your own pack, almost like you're creating your own little echo chamber, your own little sphere. And as the titles get better and better in quality, you're going to start peeling away those quote unquote, you know, never hentais or like the prude people. And like, you know what, if this game has a great base, and it's funny, because, you know, sometimes hentai is just by its nature of just a funny thing that's happening.
It's just so charming.
Yeah.
It's
the best part of it. Like, you know, for me, I mean, I have a 5 and a 3 year old. I play in my living room. Like, it's not something I'm going to go out and like buy and play. But like, I'm not everyone. I'm certainly not the majority of gamers, you know? So I wanted to speak a little bit about like, you're creating almost this marketplace kind of one little chunk at a time, and it's really cool. It's like, it's almost like when you're starting how we started a podcast, and you're like, okay, well, there's 1,000 podcasts that do video game stuff, right? Like 1,000 there, if not the 10,000, if not 100,000, you know, what makes us different? And like, Andy, you know, I think, okay, well, what if we interview people? Okay, now that group is a little smaller, right? Now we're interviewing developers or whatever. Well, there are a ton of shows that interview people, but what if we interviewed actual indie developers that are making all of these Nintendo Switch games? Because we started as a Switch podcast. And so like that audience started to get a little bit more fine, but we were getting a bigger chunk to actually give us a chance because we were more niche. So it's a very interesting parallel there. That's why I wanted to ask that question, because, I mean, as you're the person that's kind of staring at the numbers, you're staring at the groups, and you're not going to pursue something like that just based on the fact that you like the genre. There has to be more there. And I'm glad that you went into that, because, I mean, even our listeners probably don't know that these games really exist, or if they do, that they're like kind of a faux pas, and they're like they're the curtain at the VHS, at the video game, at the rental store, right? Like, that's what this is. The AO section is the curtain that only mommy and daddy can go back and rent some tapes. And also
that they shouldn't be dismissed because of that fact.
Right. They're not bullshit games just because there's hentai.
It's not just...
I mean, don't get me wrong. Understand, there's a lot of trash.
Oh, of course. There's so much trash in indie games, though.
There's trash all around.
Yeah, there's trash everywhere. Dude, Mighty No. 9 was like, come on, that was kickstarted for how many millions?
Yeah.
It got too much of my money, that's for sure.
Kaka-poo-poo-pee-pee. That's what that game was.
Yeah, but that game got coverage on websites, unlike, you know... Some of these greats.
Yeah, and like I said, despite the fact that, you know, I enjoy Bloodstained as gameplay wise, I think Bloodstained visually just...
Yeah, I mean, that was my biggest gripe. If it was the 3D models, it was like, if you had just done the sprites from Symphony of the Night, a little bit
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I like the original 2D look.
It's not even about the pixel art. Like, it's just more of just like... It feels very like amateur 3D, but whatever, right. You know, it was fun to play, and that's what people really wanted out of it.
So but also, how do you react when you see your game recommended under the Bloodstained Steam page? How does that feel?
That I'm actually more used to than anything else. It's the Japanese are just like, what the fuck, right? Like, it didn't feel really good, though. I'm really happy about it.
So I do have to ask. So there's obviously a huge crowd for these kinds of games that exist, huge communities that love these kinds of games. Do you get pushback from those who think these are like objectifying people, or just just lewd for lewdness sake?
Not yet. Okay. Right? That's what I mean by like the scene being underground the way that it is. So of course we get like the occasional guy that comes into the Steam forums and they're like, oh my God, this stuff's degenerate, blah 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 blah. Whatever. Oh, you know, this shouldn't be on Steam. And then my question is like, my nigga, like, You had to put on the AO tag to be able to see the game anyway.
Right.
What the fuck are you doing?
He's the evangelical banging like five neighbor kids in the park bathroom, screeching about.
It's definitely not yet.
Morality.
I think after a while, as the scene progresses and becomes more well known, we'll start getting some shit. There were a couple little mini events that created like a shitstorm, but those things go like those things come and go. It's not like a consistent fucking thing. For example, I'm right. This could sound fucking wild, right? But I'm right now working with a really good 3D artist with a lot of industry experience. We're making essentially a adult Animal Crossing, right?
Oh my god,
that one is gonna.
Oh boy,
Steven, you can play in bed on your Switch and the wife.
Oh boy, know. Oh, she'll know.
Yeah, like okay, yeah, like
the throbbing erection in the bed.
Pitching a tent,
like adults and everything else like that, because we had to kind of like, you know, we couldn't just go straight up Animal Crossing because then it'll be look. I mean, first of all, we wouldn't be able to do it anyway because making the like Animal Crossing like models fuck is weird because their heads are too big, right? So,
right? Yeah, that's your problem for sure.
You kind of want to see it.
So what we had to do was make them a bit taller and things like that. Like, is there a chat? There's a chat here. Let me show you. We had to make them a bit taller, and now we have. Let's see where's
oh, I'm. So,
what's the game called? I'm very curious now.
I can't look at this. So
it's code name.
Working. That's the code name.
It's code name Naughty or Nice right now. It will definitely. We will definitely. We may stick to it in case I can, like, you know, come up with a much better name, but Naughty or Nice sticks pretty hard. Love so it. Like, if I go into the chat, I'll post this Discord link here. Y'all can see. You will understand when you see it.
What is the main gameplay loop? Oh my god!
Yes, right. And then here's Thought Dog.
Oh no!
This is amazing. This is the best thing. I wish.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. Oh, and it's like and then you'll definitely like this one. This is a deer, and he's overtly over sexual, and he, what's really funny about the deer, right, is that that's a guy, right? Mm-hmm. The thing is that what gives it away that he's a guy is because he has he's a deer and he has horns, right? But he saws them down, right, so he can make himself look cuter, right?
Sure, mm-hmm. Sure.
So that's there you go. So like it's gonna be, so essentially for this particular title, it's gonna be like a bisexual game. So like essentially you can fuck anything, everybody fucks each other. It's gonna be hilarious, right?
Is that the whole point of the game? Just fucking? Is that
it's not necessarily. Well, it's gonna be it's more about building. It's also about building relationships and things of that nature. You have odd jobs that you can do, yada yada yada, and everything.
You mean like blowjobs, rim jobs,
HJs, ZJs.
But there'll be long story short, the main character comes into the town, things of that nature. The job that he was supposed to get is not available anymore, so he needs to pay rent. So he does odd jobs around the town. So he'll like work as a bartender, he'll work at a barista at a coffee place, and they all have their own like mini games associated with them, right? So there's all kinds of stuff. So think of it like, you know how like in your one of the better Yakuza games where there's just a whole bunch of shit for you to do in the town?
Yeah.
It's like that, right? But take out the combat elements, and there's a morality system that has two layers to it. Then you can be like romantically involved with characters, or you can be a slut. It's funny, right?
As a publisher, what's your curation process like? What makes you say, I want to publish that game?
Well, okay. So that's, oh man, that's such an interesting question. Cause like, the reason why that's such an interesting question is because, I am very picky and things of that nature compared to whatever, to a lot of people. I'm picky because of the fact that I'm very good at looking at something and being like, that's going to work, right? There are some projects that, but I have a lot in the pipeline, but I needed to experiment a little bit with some projects because, like I said before, the standards are growing really quickly. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple games that have gotten mixed on the platform, but not with the intention of them getting mixed on purpose. Getting mixed on purpose. There's generally reasons as to why they got mixed, and it's not because of the has nothing to do with, oh, it's the adult content or the quality wasn't there, but what it's just that the actual gameplay is there was just one thing that was off, right? Whenever a game gets mixed on Steam, there's a fundamental problem to the core experience, right? Getting mixed is actually really hard to get, right? You have to earn getting mixed, right? Most things probably will settle down in the mostly positive area. But for those particular titles, like let's say Aster, right? Aster was a good experience. Aster was made by the same guy that made Oroko, which is like a pixel art platformer title where you get fucked by monster girls if you get hit too much. Sure. And we made Aster. Aster is essentially Asteroids, again, with a slightly slippery, more slippery controls, sold it for like just $3 and everything else like that, because I was curious to see how people would react to the game. And everything else like that when it comes to, like, let's say difficulty and everything and yada yada yada. So then we have that situation. Another title by the name of Avaria didn't work out very well because there's a really good underlying reason for it. But I was essentially helping a friend out, so I was like, well, whatever, right? And then a recent one that has come out recently is the one made by my partner, and it's essentially cemented to the rest of the Western artists, that, you know, we can't get away with, you know, things that are really fucking short, right? Like, sure, it may look beautiful, it may have good voice acting, it may have good music, but if the game is not good enough as an experience, none of that shit matters, right? So these little experiments we do so that I can help solidify, I can help solidify my standards. That's one. And two, when I'm having conversations with others, right, I can point to say, hey, right, I'm a publisher guy. These games didn't work because of this, this, and this, right? Mm. If you want to meet a publisher game, you have, right, and you have any of these faults, they're not going through my system, right? Mm. So that's basically what it is. So my standards are like are now, I would say, even more solidified than they were before. I'm still really, really picky and selective of what I get, but yeah, like there is a curation process and everything else like that. And before I put things out, and then even then there's a lot of games that there's a game called My Forest Home, which is a really good example of like a transformation of a project that was just a typical little like game you'll see on DL site made by some Japanese dude that just lasts for like 20 minutes. And then I took that project and I was like, let's make this into a proper experience. So we took inspiration from Momodora and Hollow Knight. And now it's going to be like a big ass fucking thing. And you can fuck monsters. Yeah.
I love what you describe, like Hollow Knight, Momodora, some great games, but then you fucking monsters. It's like this is the icing on the cake, that little bit. Yes. Well, the literal icing, I feel sometimes with games like this. why do you think? Because a lot of the games that you publish have like this horror element to it. Like it's monsters fucking you or demons. Mm-hmm. Why do you think those two genres work so well together? Pornography and horror. Blood and boobs.
Surprisingly, I think... See, it depends on how far we're going. Guro is something that... Guro is a fetish of basically... Exactly what that is. Like, it's basically the fetish of like seeing guys and girls get chopped up into pieces and shit like that. It's definitely a fucking thing, right?
Right.
However, I think from the mild violence that you will see in Midnight Castle is considered normal, right? Compared to something that is like Guro, right? Guro is a whole different genre. In fact, I could probably give you a really good example of that. Like, let me see. I would say there was a pixel.
And even like going back to like the 80s slasher film was like combining those two things, like just hyper violence and nudity. They just work so well together.
I think they tickle the same area of the brain, right?
They pair, It's like a fine wine to a good meal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think most definitely they tickle the same brain. I find it funny and really fascinating too, though, because like Japan has the opposite problem, right? Mm. So while we have issues with sexualization, they have issues with violence. They're a lot more censorship driven.
I think getting nuke dropped on you has a lot to do with that.
Yeah. Well, that too. But they're much more about censoring violence and things of that nature. Yeah. Like for example, Resident Evil 2 remake, like our version is much more violent than theirs, right?
Right.
As an example, which I like I said, that duality is always interesting because there's always like this joke that Japan is like the literal opposite, right? Mm-hmm. But that's definitely a thing. But I do think it does hit the same notes. There's this game on Steam on DL site, which is a Japanese based environment, right, that you'll see some little gems pop up on occasion like this one, and on very very much occasion, trust me, I've looked, right? And and this is essentially a Guro title. This is it's a Guro title to an, but I'll say it's more leans more towards Riona is another fetish term, specifically. Oh my god, man! There's so many layers to this shit.
We need a 12-hour podcast for this shit. We could do a whole series on this.
Yeah,
like this is
all new to us too.
You know what? This is. So I kind of want to do a written thing. I want to do like a whole in-depth teardown of this industry kind of thing.
It's a really good promotion and some spotlight because, just despite the mainstream gaming media a little bit.
It's a lot, right? Like I can go down rabbit holes so much because there's so much to cover in the environment about why people like these particular type of things and why and what makes it tick, right? Like for example, you say this may sound completely absolutely ridiculous to you, right? Mm-hmm. But there is legitimately boyish looking characters, girly looking characters, but they're actually boys, right? You know, there's many terms for it, and I don't know which one I can use because some terms are offensive and some aren't, so whatever, right? But generally speaking, that a lot of people that like that content, right? Even though you were taught to them, right? And even though from your perspective, you would say that that is essentially LGBT content or gay content, yes?
Correct.
They will not ever state that it is, right? Not because, their fantasy realm is different from the real life, right? So while they will never have sex with a person who is gay in real life, they have no problem, right, lusting after something like Astolfo from fucking fake Go.
Right.
Uh-huh. And that market does not consider themselves at all part of any LGBT or any movement whatsoever. They want to be completely left alone to their own devices, to jack off to people like Astolfo, right? That's what I'm talking about in terms of how our industry works. Right. So some people would come at, so for example, because there's a lot of Japan also works that way too, right? They'll so it's like I said rabbit holes. There's so much to explain about how this environment works. So what I mean for that, so like if you wanted to appease to the people that like Astolfo from Fake Go, right, you don't do it by having tremendous amounts of overtly political things in your content. They don't care about that shit. They just want to see cute boy get fucked. That's it, right? You see what I'm saying? So that's it. So that's, but if you were to ask them, they will seriously say that they're still straight, right?
Sure.
That's the thing. Yeah. And they will not, 100%. They will say
I think the same works for my scenario too. Like I have no interest in what's in the female body, but I'll enjoy playing a game that has, you know, just 8-bit tits everywhere and getting both her holes filled.
It's really fascinating, right? It's fascinating how
it is
a fascinating prospect. But like, but you know, whenever somebody says like, but like I said, that's just one of the rabbit holes. Like, you know, I'm going back to Sinstar.
Well, there's plenty of holes involved, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's so many. There's a lot.
There's a rabbit hole. I believe we've gone down a buck hole or like some sort of deer hole earlier. There were a lot of holes. Lots of holes.
There's so much. There's so much to talk about and everything else like that. About like how what makes the industry tick for people. What people are here for. What their type of content that they want. Now there's all kinds of subgenres and everything else like that. There's food, like in my environment we have like Fujos. Fujos are essentially girls that want to see like they are like overtly sexualizing let's say gay couples. So they're the type of people that they see two men just stare at each other with a stern look and they're like they have to love each other, right? They're crazy. All right, these are the people that go into insane shipping wars and shit like that.
Oh, it's like what is it, Captain America and what's his face?
Yes.
Bucky. Yeah. Yes,
it's that. Yeah, they can get pretty wild, right? But like but appeasing to them is not the same as appeasing to somebody that likes a Stofo from Fate Go, right? Mm. They're not the same market, right?
Right.
Right. And it's fascinating. Yes, it is kind of funny because
it's quite the onion.
The funny thing is, despite you know some people complaining of like some people stating about like how like males are like into like you know like just overt sexualization of women, Fujos are into crazy ass shit, right? there's some of them that like I'm dead serious. Like everything that you think that guys are probably much more interested. I would say that's not true. Guys are more, I would say, interested more into vanilla, right, than Fujos. Right. Fujos want to see guys rape each other. They want to see violence. They want to see, it's insane, Lord. Right?
You're combining everything in one aspect.
I'm not joking, right? They're a lot like, and it's primarily a woman demographic. And they, right?
Yeah, I think that's like the biggest irony of all.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't expect that.
They're far. I would say they're worse. They are definitely worse and much more into far more like just heart wrenching and depressing and fucking fucked up shit than guys are. Surprisingly enough, right? And I can back that up with like Fujos in my server. They just love that shit.
He has the stats. He has the receipts to back it up.
Yeah. So how guy? But then here's the funny thing, right? Then the guys have the Yuri department, and this is the funniest shit.
Oh, I have what is happening right now?
So Yuri, all right. Yuri is essentially a state guys that are, you know, overtly romanticizing lesbian relationships, right? Mm-hmm. So they love, you know, cute girls fucking each other and things of that nature.
Correct.
However, the thing about it is that they're not really much interested in the overt sexual acts. They just get off on the romanticism. Right, and anything else like that.
On their actual bond and the love for each other.
Yes, exactly. Right,
not the physical act.
However,
emotional Fujos
are literally the complete opposite. Right, but the thing about it is, you don't make Yuri games for women. They're primarily a male demographic. Right, isn't that crazy? Man,
you see, if we have to first break down this whole thing at first that these kind of games are specifically for men who want to sexualize women. If you break down that myth first. We'd open the floodgates, I think, over here, because I think that's what's holding it back primarily.
Look at there was a game that people are playing now. It's a game where you're playing a single dad and you're going out dating other dads. It's not even a hentai game. It's just Dream Daddy. Yeah. That's the game. That's what it is. And my God, the women are going nuts over the chats of like streams and stuff like that. It got quite thirsty in there, but I want to shift a little bit here. I want you to give us a little bit of a breakdown, Ryan, of why people should give Midnight Castle, a second look before we get into, or a first look in, before we get into rapid fire, because we do need to kind of move the shit along a little bit.
It's a lot. I can tell you, I'm telling you, there's so much.
Dude, we're going to keep in touch because I feel like there's something here. There's a story that needs to be like written down and explored, and like a multi-part series needs to happen on this, because this is bananas to me. Like, this is like Charlie pegboard fucking chalk, and like with the lines drawing everything, like
and Pepe Silvia and all the whole shit, dude.
We need Mulder and Scully, and like this is, we need some breakdown of this shit. All right, so let's get back to Midnight Castle real quick. Why should people play this game?
Oh, real quick, there's a game that I just sent in the chat. It's called Waifus over Husbandos, primarily male demographic, and it's very positive and everything else together with 2,000 reviews. That's all male. Like, that is a male demographic for that game, 100%. Right. All right. So Midnight Castle. Yes. What makes Midnight for me? It's like real simple. Like, Midnight Castle is basically imagine Simon's Quest, but not ass. Right. It fixes a lot of the problems that Simon Quest had in terms of like the heart system and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. The game starts off semi-linear, right? But then opens up a lot once you get to the mid part of the game, very similar to Simon's Quest and some elements of Castlevania 3, where essentially the other half of the game opens up, right? And things of that nature. It's just a proper made game. If you like Castlevania, you'll like this shit, you know? And that's the thing. You'll also recognize that the creator Pixel, he was, you know, very serious about making it faithful, but not falling into the same pitfalls and traps that the originals had, and improves on a lot of the base formulas. Right?
Yeah, and to add to that, one more thing: it takes, I would say, the best parts from a lot of different Castlevania games and puts them all into one game, and that's why I think it works really, really well. Endless titties.
Yeah, like it's not like Midnight Castle is not like a big, overtly like big essay sell. I mean, it's just a solid ass fucking platform. Yeah. If you like those games,
exactly,
you'll like
it's a well built game.
Just, you know, don't play it in front of the children. All right.
Oh, there's a safer word mode, so if you want to, you can.
There of you course. Go.
Yeah, I told you. Yeah.
All right. So, with that being said, we're gonna get into rapid fire. We're gonna close out the show with some rapid fire. It's gonna be fun. But before we do that, folks, we want to tell you that if you like what you're hearing, from not necessarily about the whole demon porn, but if you like this show, you can support us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/ndspodcast, just like our Patreon producers Colton, the Apprentice Nestler, and FNH Paul, we cannot continue to grow without all of your support. Thank you so very much. We are so humbled by all of the support that you guys give us over there. And remember, $1 gets you a bonus episode every single month in which you can vote the topic, and also you get an invitation to our VIP Discord. That's right, it's patrons, guests of the show, and us. That's all that's in there. No posers, no dum-dums, and we literally talk all... Well, there's plenty of dum-dums. We're all dum-dums, if I'm being honest.
Yeah,
but,
sure. Yeah.
And, but it's a great place to hang out, and we appreciate all of the support that we get. And also, we want to remind you that this, our first episode of one of our brand new seasonal shows, we're going to do 6 total episodes. Episode 1 is up of Casting Call, in which Andy and I cast a movie of one of our favorite video games ever, Metal Gear Solid. So if you want to listen to that, head over to YouTube. It is not on audio format yet. I'm kind of waiting on that. I don't know if I want to do it at all. I think I kind of want to just make it a YouTube thing. I don't know. It's kind of up in the air. But go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/dualscreenstv. And if you're already watching on youtube.com/dualscreenstv, please hit the subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, and hit that little notification bell. And now, it's time for rapid fire, and this is going to be a good one, folks. Oh man, I don't know. Should you know what? I'll start. Ryan.
Yeah, you go ahead. Go ahead.
We're gonna start easy. We're gonna give you some easy ones here.
Easy. Mm-hmm.
Flight or invisibility?
Invisibility, bro.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I had a feeling that was coming.
Oh, pineapple on pizza? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. How much money would you need to be given to get a Prince Albert piercing?
God damn. See,
yeah, the, goddamn lot of money, that's for sure.
I got a lot because I keloid, so like that shit fucking stupid. Ooh,
yeah,
so I'll do it for the sake of like getting the money, right? And then I'll be like, oh well, I don't need to even have the piercing anymore because it'll seal up anyway, right?
Yagi, oh no, no mames.
Oh. Okay, would you rather your tears be carbonated or your piss be carbonated?
Oh,
yes,
that's a new one.
It is a new one.
You can like do something with that.
Yeah, you might be able to. Yeah,
yeah,
just don't put any pop rocks in there, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
Would you rather have your tongue come out of your asshole or your pee hole? Keep in mind, this is how you're going to taste things.
I think it would be more. That's a good fucking point. I'd say pee. I'd say pee hole, right? True.
Yeah.
You can do more like tongue action when you fuck women. It'll be great.
There you go.
This is a yeah, it makes sense.
Or dudes, you know, whatever floats your boat.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Wherever you put your peen, wherever you put your peen is your business. You know what I mean?
Don't kink shame.
No kink shame here.
Not at all. Like, I'm a fucking degenerate. Yeah,
this is why you're here. That's actually our curation process, Ryan. Getting on the show. It's the only thing we asked for. Would you rather wear someone else's mask or their underwear?
Ooh.
Mm.
Ooh.
It's a very timely question. We ain't Corona right now. I'll take
exactly.
Right? Like,
either one of those is having issues.
I know,
but man, I don't know about, you know, maybe it was a different timeline, right? Maybe.
Right.
Would you ever, for $1 million, would you let a professional landscape sculptor use a chainsaw to shape your pubes?
Mm.
Wow.
For $1 million, you got this guy can shape. He could make like the Mona Lisa in a bush somewhere. You're like, ning, 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 ning.
He's a master manscaper.
Just a master.
I'm lucky that I'm not a greedy person. It reminds me of the whole thing, reason why I don't get LASIK. Like personally, like the 0.001% chance that I could go blind is enough for me to be like, yeah, fuck that shit. I'm just gonna wear glasses. Right. So there's your answer.
Good.
All right. I think I have you've actually spawned, Stephen, a pube question in me
pubes,
as well.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Yeah. Pubes are good. Nothing's off.
Would you rather have your parents shave your pubes with a regular razor?
Interesting.
Or would you rather do it with a straight razor with your non-dominant hand?
Oh my god. Oh my god.
I think I could do it with my non-dominant hand.
All right. Confident. I like it.
No, my mom would be shaving my pubes so fast, dude. She's been shaving her legs. She's been shaving her legs forever. You know what I mean? But my dad, he's got that shaky hand. My dad's got that shaky hand, and that's just going to be weird. But mom, get in there. Go ahead. Get it done.
He's got the yips.
You know, like if I fall and break both my legs, like my wife and my mom, those are the two that are going to be taking care of me, right?
That's true. So, that's true.
Not my 5-year-old. He ain't picking me up. Good Lord. I'm going to calm this one down a little bit just for now.
Yeah. Let's pump the brakes.
I mean, you can ask whatever fucking.
No, it's good. It's good. No, don't worry. It ebbs and flows. Is cereal a soup?
Damn.
That
is a complex philosophical
question. It is.
Cereal a soup?
It's milk and cereal, cereal and milk.
Mm. See, I am understanding that I can get the cereal becomes a soup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
I like it. That's a very Bruce Lee of you. I like that.
Yes.
Very nice.
Cereal becomes a soup.
Yes. Yeah. Skippy or Jif peanut butter.
Wow.
You see?
Skippy because of the fact that the crunchy Skippy is better than Jiffy Crunchy.
I'm agreeing with you on that one. The crunchy is definitely better than the Skippy's. Like the Skippy peanut butter, like when you, with the chunky, when you're spreading that, it tears the bread to shit. Like it's so nice and chunky. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite form of water?
Smart water.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking like gaseous, solid, or liquid, but that's good. No, yeah, that's good. I like that.
You went for the brand.
You went with the PhD. I like it.
Yeah, good for product placement on this one. Proud sponsor of Dual Screens Podcast.
Nope, not a sponsor.
Smart not a sponsor.
Certainly not starting with this episode.
No, no, you could find a sponsor. I don't know, like that's Rage Shadow Legends. We'll probably sponsor you in this one, right?
Would you rather watch the tape from The Ring or say Candyman in the Mirror three times? Now, they both come true.
Okay, so it's a
watch
fact.
The tape, this is a, in 7 days.
I would watch the tape from The Ring just because I'm more of a fan of Japanese horror and I think it would be a more interesting death.
There you go.
I'd be scared to death instead of being chopped up in pieces. I think.
Or you get bees in your mouth or some shit like that.
Probably faster, right? Like,
right, yeah.
And also, I get to be like a cool, like fucking Everghost. I can go haunt other people.
That's true, with a twisted, fucked up face.
That's cool. Like that. Yeah. If there is a spirit world or some sort of afterlife, like I almost kind of want to be like here forever, like haunting people. Like I feel like that'd be fun. It would probably get boring after a while, but like I feel like that's better than living in paradise. Like being here and fucking with people seems to be more fun to me than sitting.
That sounds like heaven.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Actually going
right. Okay. Yeah. We got a couple more here.
Okay.
What is the scariest thing?
What is the scariest thing?
What's just the scariest fucking thing?
Feeling that I have died and not accomplished anything.
That's good. That's deep.
I think you will never have to worry about that ever, my friend.
Yes. Yes. You've proliferated demon cock. More better than
I am
most
going
people.
To speaking of cock, I'm gonna shift back to the second.
Okay, going back to cocks. Again. Here we go.
Why not?
Gird your loins.
Now these two characters can become anything you want. They're shapeshifters.
Oh.
Would you rather fuck a Ditto from Pokemon or Mystique from X-Men?
Mm.
But they can both be anything you want them to be.
Interesting. But
it's just, you know what
default.
The Ditto.
Yeah, you know what
they're default. See, here's the thing. I'd take the Ditto because I think the Ditto would be able to like turn into like Monster Girls and shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? And the Ditto would be more like a thing and less than a person, like
people,
a sentient man. Person, you know?
Yeah,
you'd get bored of fucking people eventually.
Just grow a fleshlight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I take the Ditto. Yeah, here we
good.
Go. Also, Ditto is the best Pokemon, but regardless.
Well, yes.
All right, Andy, I'm going to ask my final question, and then you could hit him up with the final question. All right,
here we go.
All right. What is the dumbest way you've injured yourself?
I love this question.
I was on roller skates, and I ran into a parked car and broke my leg.
That's wow. Like a dumb thing. That's real dumb.
Yeah. Because you can say, I was hit by a car.
I was hit by a car that was stationary and I was the one moving.
Cool thing,
but that's like the oldest joke, though. You're so dumb, you hit by a parked car.
Yeah.
That was good.
I just kind of veered in the wrong direction and just slammed into the fucking back of a fucking bumper. That sucked.
Awesome.
Oh, boy. All right, Ryan, we've asked a lot of you on this podcast tonight. Some deep philosophical questions.
Mm-hmm.
They've asked you about soups and cereals, peanut butters, fucking Dittos and Mystiques.
Mm-hmm. Both of those things happen.
Pineapples and pizza. But this is going to be the ultimate question.
Mm-hmm.
One choice.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Andy or Steven?
Mm-hmm.
Shit. Mm-hmm. Lion, Andy or Steven? Andy or Steven? And that's a good. Yeah, that's the point.
He's phoning a friend. Steven. This is the first Steven. On the podcast.
There it is. Steven. Boom.
Right? Oh, my God.
I'll take it. I'll take it. I'll take that as a two. I'll take that as both of you deciding that one. That was a unanimous vote. I love it. I love it. I love it. That, folks, is going to bring us to the end of the show. If you would like what you are – if you want to follow us, go to social media. We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram at NDS Podcast. I'm at BatChild27. Andy is at PantsGuy. You can follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams, or my personal Twitch is twitch.tv/BatChild, which I do a ton of stuff there as well. We want to thank our theme song is Retro Chatter by Bradley Parsons at Train Sound Studio. We want to thank Andrew Douglas for all of our cartoon art. Thank you, Matt Murray, for our logos and overlays. And Ryan, thank you so very much. Where can everybody follow you and everything that you do?
I just type in Critical Bliss in Google and then you just follow my Steam page.
Awesome.
So you can do that. If you're not opted in into Steam's AO system, you won't be able to see all the games. So just make sure you go to your preferences and opt in, right? And everything else like that. You'll be able to see it there. And you can just follow me at Critical Bliss on Twitter. I also own Lewd Gamer. So if you want to go see some news stuff about naughty shit, you can just go there. Right?
So. Awesome.
All right.
Andy, is there anything you want to tell the kids before we go?
No, this was great. It's the good way to kick off our month of horror type games. And I think this one is a hard one to beat. A high standard now.
we've set the bar.
The bar's been raised really high.
We've definitely set the bar. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Ryan. This was awesome. And listeners, thank you. And as always, please be excellent to each other.